This is Microphone Check, hip-hop from NPR Music. I'm Franny Kelly.
I'm Ali Shaheed Muhammad.
This is Nas.
What up, Nas, in the building?
What's going on, General?
Oh, man, so happy to be here with you, legend.
Yeah, same here.
Why are you in L.A. right now?
L.A.? I'm always here.
Oh, you live here now?
For the past 15 years.
Okay.
A place I like to stop through.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Is that different? Like, why the move? Why the change?
My daughter moved here with her mom when she was like 4 and a half, something like that. So I was out here, and I love it. You know, I'm like, wow, they was on to something coming here. So, you know, I was coming so much, I just had to get a place here too.
I'm at that point where I'm like trying to decide whether to jump or not. Like, New York is just, well, the older I get, the more I hate the cold. I always disliked it, but now it's just like hate. I'm turning into a baby when it gets past a certain temperature. And I'm like, every time you come to New York, I mean, L.A., it's just the sun makes me happy. I don't care what's going on. So
I'm like a sun chaser, I call myself. So anywhere where the weather's like, you know what I mean? I'm there. So L.A. was, but and there's nothing like California. It's nothing like it. I think you're digging, man. Come out here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just always instantly good eating. You start eating healthy.
Yeah.
You want to go hiking, all these things you can't really do in NYC.
I like that everybody goes to bed early here. Wake up well rested. It's kind of crazy.
I'm thinking.
That's not you. You don't do that?
Me, my hours shift because it's like traveling the globe.
That's
you
true.
Could be in Germany one day, Tokyo the next, and it's just like the clock is just, it's never right.
Mm-hmm.
So even last night, I missed the session because I needed to take a nap from all the traveling. It's just, so I don't know.
Yeah. It's good for people like us, though, in music.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's good. It's a good place for that.
There's a lot more people from the music industry that kind of, like, migrated out here now.
Yeah.
It seems like every time
I see everybody. Everybody's like, yo, I'm here. You know, so I think you got to do it.
Does that work out for you, like, just, like, doing sessions, just running into people or having just more facility here?
Yeah, because every time I'm back in New York and I want to get in the studio, I give a call to somebody, they out here.
Mm.
So now it's cool though. So I'm like, I'm here too.
Yeah.
So I spend a lot of time here in Cali. Yeah.
Does that surprise you? Was there ever a time when you were younger that you'd be like, there's no way I would ever leave New York. I would never leave Queens.
I always left the block. You know, I always liked what was going on at Times Square, Harlem, mm-hmm. Fulton Street, Brooklyn, Jamaica Avenue, the Bronx. I always, you know, got around the city. It's a big thing for New Yorkers to get around the city and learn, and you know, when you're young, learn what's going on in another neighborhood. So I always knew Queens was my home, but it's important for me to roam around. So, from early on, I always looked at the whole world like, you know, got to get out there.
So you've been in the game for a good long time.
Yeah.
Are you still charged like when you were 19?
Yo, I can't say like I was when I was 19, but I'm still charged. Mm-hmm. It's a crazy thing, you know. I think a lot of it has to do with just, you know, I was lucky enough to have been there from the moments of Tribe when y'all first came in the game. I was talking to Q-Tip the other day about like El Segundo, left my wallet in El Segundo. What, that's genius. Mm-hmm. You know, the music, the rhyme, you know, going to Brooklyn to pick up Shaheed, and then we're on a quest. We're going, parents are away, and we're going going the journey in the world, like I was talking about earlier, I always wanted to go out and move and see what was out there. And that song is about that, you know. And I only heard this, the word El Segundo from Fred Sanford, Red Fox on Sanford and Son. So to hear it in a rap song, it's amazing to me. And so, yeah, so but being a fan from the days before Tribe, you know, the early, early days as a kid to up until now, it gives me a fire. It keeps me, like, keeps me going.
Do you think that there's enough of a connection for the youth, the younger ones that's coming out now to really know where it all it came from?
I think it's there, but there's, I think the young have their own young story to tell us, and it's such a story that it's new to them that they're just excited to tell their story that we need to hear. Mm. And then there's a side where they just lazy. Mm. They don't want to go. They don't know that it's beneficial for them to really know what they're talking about and know what they're doing. So, you know, some of this stuff may come out a little limited. Mm-hmm. There's some of their creativities could be a little limited because of that.
Do you ever mentor or like talk to give direction to some? You know, if someone comes up to you that seems like they're bubbling a little bit and they may need like they just may need a little like look. Let me just tell you. You know, this is you going here, but let me just shift you a little. Do you have that engagement with any of the up and comings?
I mean, whoever wants to hear it, you know, I met a few good guys out there from Mac Miller to Bishop Nauru to Boldy James and for Sean and I'm looking forward to meet so many more of them, but whoever wants to chop it up, we go there. J. Cole is somebody that's like really intuitive, somebody who's really smart beyond his years. So I learned something when I talked to J. Cole. Yeah. But he's always trying to find out some stories. Like he'll always, if I see him, he's going to get a story out of me.
Yeah.
He's, you know, and that's cool because I always looked up to the dudes that got that wisdom too. I always know who to hit up a story. I'll call Eric B up and Eric B will fill in the blanks for me about things I didn't know. Or I talked to it's a few dudes, man. It's you know, I'll call and talk to. So I'm there. Whoever want to hear me, what I got to say, I'm here to talk. It's all good. We can talk.
You would think that everyone would want to talk to Nas. But I like the way you said whoever want to hear you, because that's what it ultimately comes down to. Cause,
yeah.
And respecting their position is just young, living their life and want to express and not really want to be talked to or talked down to. And they may take it as they being talked down to. It's not that. You're trying to give direction, but they're like, yo, let me live my life. Yeah. You know, so I understand having to just respect that and be like, cool, go ahead.
Right.
You know.
Right, for sure.
But what are the benefits to talking to you? Like, why do people need to know their history? Why do people need to know the stories? Why do you still try to find out the stories and find out how things got from point A to point B?
Because, you know, you want to know. I think you should want to know.
Yeah.
You know, people that have come before you paved the way. I always wanted to talk to them, and you know, I don't want to run into something blindly. You know, I don't want to just run out there. I don't think nobody, for some part of it, we want to learn our way on our own, so we can learn from our mistakes. But
sure.
We like to learn also. It's like if you're born, you need to know that how did America get structured. So you go into school and then they teach you about George Washington and this and the amendments and that. So that you don't just come around here thinking you invented everything. It all starts with you. You look like a fool. So you want to know, okay, how did we get from point A to where I am today? And then you know what you're working with.
That makes sense.
I hope so.
So, to go back a little bit, El Segundo was on your demo, right?
It was.
That was your demo?
El Segundo was on the demo. So was Bonita Applebaum.
And, wow.
What was on your demo?
I had I had demos that didn't make it, that didn't make the album.
Got it.
But then the ones that did was Ain't Hard to Tell. Is a Michael Jackson sample that Large Professor did. I think that was it.
Yeah. Did you know, like when you made that song, did you know?
Well, I mean, yeah, I knew I liked the record. I liked the beat. I knew I liked what I was doing, but it was still a work in progress. Ali, was Bonita Apple Bum at a demo, in the demo stages?
There was a change. We changed the music. The original idea and the lyric was the same, but the music changed. But I know when Tips, like, he spit that out, it was 15.
He was 15.
Yeah. And because I knew, I mean, we grew up together, so it was loosely about somebody that was in the high school. So it was just like, just that feeling, knowing like, yo, you just made this joint about this. It just felt like, yeah, this is something special. And right. It was just like, what is Bonita Applebum? You know?
Yeah.
But it was just the way like Tip just rhymed, and it just felt like, yeah, this is important. I didn't know so much about Description of a Fool, which was another song that was on the demo. But and that became the first single, actually. I know it was something, there was a coolness about it, but I didn't know how people would respond to it.
Right.
But I don't know. It's interesting to know when people are in their demo stages and creating, and how like that song becomes like the song on the album. I don't know. We should talk to some other artists about from that perspective, but It Ain't Hard to Tell is a strong record, bro. Yo, I was just in Toronto and dropped that. The remix on it, and they was just like,
yo.
Matter of fact, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I almost didn't play it, and Scratch Bassett saw what I was loading up. He was like, punching me like, you gotta drop that. I was like, I know, right? And I dropped it. I was like, thank you.
That's crazy, though. You know, at 15 years old, Q-Tip, and you guys were together putting those records together. That's just genius. You guys are just genius.
Likewise, though.
Dude.
I mean,
dude, man. Like the album cover, the album title, the whole thing about being on a journey into the world, where you just asked about leaving the block. A lot of people don't want to leave the block. We all know people who don't want to leave the block.
Mm-hmm.
So the tribe movement, to me, was encouragement to get out there to the world, to get out and go out. And when I used to go to the clubs and all of that, I used to take one homeboy with me that didn't mind getting away from the money. He, you know, come on, we're going to go out and, you know, do some things and hang out. Everybody else wanted to stay on the block. I'd take one dude with me, and we'd go out to, we'd go downtown to the Village. And back then, it was Washington Square Park. It was crazy. It was live. And I would go there and kind of like eavesdrop on the crowd over there. So you have a comedian over here. You have a bunch of cool kids over there. And I try to find out what's going on in the city just listening. and, you know, get something to drink and just sit there. The weather's nice. And I saw Jarobi. And I never told the story, but I saw Jarobi, and I followed his crowd. And I listened to what they were talking about. And there was a couple of them, and there was a girl over there. I started talking to her, seeing where the clubs was at. So I found out about a club that used to be an old bank. I don't know if you remember this club. I don't know the name of it. But it was used to be, I think it was called The Vault.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah.
So wow, so like, it's crazy. I remember the story, but my boy's like, oh, where? We're going to go there? I'm like, yeah. It was kind of like walking distance. So we were even able to walk and follow Jarobi and his entourage to that club.
That's dope. That's crazy.
You know what I mean? So damn, how did I get all the way over
there? Well, do you still find... That's crazy.
You were, like,
spying
on him?
I'm just questing. Yeah. So I had a real quest with a member of Tribe early on before I had any records or anything.
That's crazy. Do you still find that even, you know, like, you have your success, and obviously with success, it's harder to move around just, like, without people, like, wanting to come up to you or just... Yeah. Do you find that you get that space where you still can kind of, like... go find out what's going on, get into a situation, like find that homie, be like, yo, let's hit the road, let's travel somewhere to...
Oh, it's harder. Today is harder.
Yeah.
It's much harder to do that. Because, you know, a lot of my friends are, you know, they done scattered. They went different directions. You know what I'm saying? It's hard to just get that move going, like where we just go out and then because, you know, people are recognized, it's kind of like I wind up going to like artsy places now, and, you know, with weird people, and I'm starting to relate to them more. I probably always related to weird people, to tell you the truth, you know. So, you know, yeah, it's not as easy as it was. Hmm.
Do you have people that you trust to like send them out in the world and ask them to bring stuff back?
You know, I like to find things myself.
Yeah.
You know, it's not as easy as it used to be, but, you know, if I'm out here, I go to a bookstore, SO1 bookstore, great bookstore, and lots of black literature, black history, lots of stuff you don't find in Barnes & Noble is at SO1, or, you know, I go by myself, you know, I go, and that's by Lamert Park. And you get to go past Crenshaw and all of that and feel the community, you know. And you know, I find places on my own, and I go there by myself, you know. And it's in that way I still enjoy the things I used to do.
I've been around, like, my mom lives in Lamar Park, so I know what you're talking about.
Just... Cool. cool. Wow.
Yeah. So I always find it interesting just to, you know, go up in that area. And it's just like, to me, it's got that L.A. kind of like thing on top of it, just that togetherness sort of a thing. But it kind of reminds me of D.C. a little bit, too. I don't know why I just thought about that. But that's dope that you can go there and kick it and just...
Everywhere I'm at, D.C., like you mentioned, D.C., I love that city.
Yeah.
Everywhere I go, cities that I like L.A., D.C., Miami, Philly, I wind up at the bookstore, I wind up at the restaurants, and the people are like, yo, you know, you here? I'm like, yeah, I'm here. You here? We here. Like, you know, I keep it 10 toes on the ground. You know, that's important. You know, I think that kind of answers your question. Like, you got to stay involved. You got to stay listening to what these shorties is rapping about, because you could easily be out of touch. Mm. And I was talking to somebody, and they was like, they don't keep up with all the latest, the news, like the flight, the Malaysia flight, and all of that.
Did they find it yet?
No.
I haven't checked it out.
No.
Come on.
They don't keep up with all of it because they're concerned more with more spiritual things and more holistic teachings within their home front, teaching their kids on, you know, natural things and real things that deal with them, and not so much of what's happening in the media. And I said, that's good, but then there's another side where you got to stay in tune. You got to always stay in tune on every level of the street, on every level with the people.
Have you heard any records recently that make you go, yo, I just heard something and it touched me and make me want to go in the studio. Not to battle somebody, but just to be like, that just kind of lit a fire in you.
Yeah, the tune-in joint, Jay Electronica. Mm. That he said something about love songs are for looking out the window, looking out something about house flies. Like, he just he said, like, you know, that name on the birth certificate is not the real me. Like, you know, he said, sue me, bill me. The name on the birth certificate is not the real me. Man of the year, man of the year, my man Schoolboy Q. You know, it's a few, it's a lot of records out there. I'm looking forward to listening to YG new album. I'm looking forward to more Dom Kennedy. Mm-hmm. You know, all those dudes remind me of myself. You know what I mean? They remind me of, you know, we come from that same thing. So definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you dropped out of high school, is that right?
Yeah.
And you read so much, right? And you've always done that, is that true?
I try to read as much as humanly possible, mm-hmm. but I don't have enough time.
Right.
I don't, there's so many things I want to learn about, I don't have enough time to. So I try to stay around smart people so they could just fill me in what I'm missing out on. Mm. You know what I'm saying? But I got a collection of books, and you know, I sometimes reread stuff. I gotta revisit some stuff I may have read 5 years ago that I don't remember that well, so I revisit a lot of classics. Mm-hmm. Like Huey P. Newton's book, Revolutionary Suicide, you know, or Richard Pryor's book, Pryor Convictions, or you know, a lot of autobiographies. Mm. I really like to, because you don't see it on a bio channel on A&E as much, and then when you do, it's commercials. You know what I'm saying? Mm. So I need the story. Red Fox is somebody I'm really intrigued by, you know. Because the man was able to do what they called blue comedy back then. It was just cursing and raw. And he was doing that, like, on a major level, playing Las Vegas, wearing diamond rings in front of your face and driving Rolls Royces. But yet television knew his talent needed to be there, you know? And even though he didn't care about that, his comedy was not clean. Television still found a slot for him. Mm. And when they found it, his slot was one of the biggest TV shows ever. So, you know, something about people like that who are not just the normal, you know, who come from honesty and what they do, and then the mainstream world picks up on it, I like them people.
Mm-hmm. What do you get out of, what's the benefit to educating yourself instead of allowing yourself to be educated by somebody else?
I think every great man educates himself. A great woman educates herself. It's not a thing where it's just certain type of person does that. I think every person out there, you know, has something in them that pushes them to learn.
Mm-hmm. I tried to do this radio series a couple years ago where my mom was like, "Why do you like hip hop so much? Why do you listen to hip hop? I don't get it." And then I realized she couldn't hear the words, like her hearing is damaged, and like she couldn't get it. So I was giving her albums and lyric sheets so she could read along. And the first two I gave her were Illmatic and Low End Theory.
Wow.
And which led to some really amazing, amazing moments when she didn't understand what a shorty was or a filly, and she was like, "So what you're saying is, like, I could have a friend, like a young friend, who would go to the store and get me a cheesesteak?"
One time for your mind, one time. Yeah, whatever. One time for your mind, one time. Yo, whatever. One time for your mind, one time. Hey, yo, nah. What up, kick that fucking rhyme. Check it out. When I'm chilling, I grab the Buddha, get my food, I buy beers and watch a flick, illin' and root for the villain, huh? Plus every morning I go out and love it sorta chilly, then I send a shorty from my block to the store for Phillies after being blessed by the herb's essence.
Like, for real? I want that.
Yeah.
But, so when she sort of became, like, acclimated to the sound, the pacing, the cadence, or whatever, like, She couldn't believe her ears. And the thing that tripped her out the most was she was like, he dropped out of high school? Like, he did this after dropping out of high school. He's a genius.
Oh, man.
Like, forget about it.
God bless her heart.
Oh, man. She's going to love that. But, I mean, I guess that to me is like the greatest loss in people who dismiss hip hop sometimes for like language reasons, like you say, or format reasons, like there's no place for it on commercial radio or something. But, you know, I tried to explain it to her when she has problems with the language that it's not for her, that you didn't make Illmatic for her and for her sensibilities.
Right.
Who did you make it for?
My surroundings, the hip-hop community also, and to be number one, the number one MC, the number one rapper. Like, we, most of us are out to be the best. And so that meant I made it for other rappers. I made it for other MCs. I made it for other hip-hop groups. I made it for artists, singers, people in the arts. That's who I made it for. But it comes from the street. So my surroundings wrote that album, and I made it for them. It's the theme. It's the theme songs for my surroundings when I made that album, right? These albums was all written and produced by the streets in a large sense. So you're right. I didn't care about, I didn't know there was anyone else that was supposed to hear it. Like when people got mad at Oprah not putting them on hip hop, I didn't know we were supposed to go on Oprah. I didn't never think that much about, I was so excited about Run DMC. I was so excited about, I don't know if I would have liked to have seen them on Oprah's couch, and I love Oprah, but I don't know if I would, I care too much about the acceptance. You wanted to see them at the heights of Michael Jackson. You wanted everyone to know that this music that you love deserves credit. But whether they liked it or not really wasn't the biggest deal. It was like within the hip-hop community is all that, if the acknowledgement within the human hip-hop community is all I cared about. And even I'm still that way to this day to some point. There's been points of my life where I have take a stance like, nah, hip-hop needs to be get love here and there and there. But at the bottom line, it don't matter. It's all about the hip-hop community. I think that's the way with rock and roll. I think they don't care if we like them or not. I think they're like, yo, this is rock, and y'all have no idea what this is about. And with classical music, I think they don't care if Soulja Boy likes them. You know what I'm saying? They doing what they're doing. They don't care if BET likes them. You know, they're doing what they're doing.
But it's still meaningful when people outside that world like it.
Yeah, like I said, it was great to see Run DMC sell all these records on Raising Hell or Break Down Barriers with Rock Box on MTV. That's big. That's big for the art form. You know, right. We want the world to go, you better. We it's like I said, y'all better recognize. You know, but at the end of the day, that wasn't it. It was the fact that record goes hard in the radio. On the turntable when they playing it at the jams or at the club, or on the, even, so that's all that mattered, that we're having a good time jamming to records that speak to us.
Yep, exactly. Well, I want to go back to It Ain't Hard to Tell, which was the first single in the first video, right?
Yeah. It was kind of halftime, but halftime was like a soundtrack, was on a soundtrack.
Right.
But that was kind of my first official single from Illmatic and first video ever on my own as a solo artist. But Ain't Hard to Tell was the real one because it was no movie soundtrack attached to it. It was all about Illmatic.
Right.
Yeah.
And Ralph McDaniels directed that one?
Yeah, shout out to Ralph. Yeah.
How involved were you in deciding your image, what you would look like and what the video would look like and how it would represent you?
100%. Well, with how I look like, I had that part, but Ralph McDaniels had...
Like those were your clothes?
Yeah. You know, Ralph McDaniels had found the locations and put the whole story, I guess, if it was a story, it was just his vision. It was his vision. And I loved it, and I rode with it. And I was honored to have him direct the video because he is one of the guys who pushed this thing to where it is today. Ralph, if there was no Ralph McDaniels, there would be no me, because he is as important as Mr. Magic, Red Alert, Chuck Chill Out, Marley Marl. He's as important as all those guys that were breaking these records on the radio in the early 80s. He was the video channel. He was it. So to have the video channel guy himself direct my video, my first video, was beyond a dream come true. Yeah, we had no stylist then. A stylist was unheard of. If you'd have gave me a stylist, he or she would have got ignored. Like, come on, Ali.
Yep.
We wasn't stylists. Nope. We was teaching the stylists what they know now. They learned from us back then. So, you know, we was a stylist.
Well, Ralph has also told us a story about shooting the club scene and why there are feathers in the air.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's not mad anymore or anything.
I love Ralph. Ralph, you know I was young, and you know I was just getting off the block, man. I mean.
Hard to tell video. There's a scene where, like, there's feathers flying in the air. Like, people were getting robbed in the crowd, you know, yeah. Like, with blades. And, like, their goose from their goose down, you see it, like, kind of, like, flying in the air.
I had promised the promoter...
Maria
at the
Davis.
Club. No, it was Jessica.
Oh, Jessica? Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Okay.
She said, I can't, because there had already been a couple incidents, and it seemed like everywhere Nas went, there was gunplay
those
somewhere.
Those little guys.
Yeah, the little guys. And everything was going fine. I said, it's Ralph, and it's going to be fine, and don't worry, we're going to shoot it, we're going to be in, out. And everything was fine up until the very end. And then somebody shouted Queensbridge, and then you hear pop, pop, pop. Yeah.
Like right, he was standing like right next to me.
Yeah. And I'm under a table. I'm like, even then, I'm like, I'm too old for this shit. Like, the cash registers got robbed.
Oh, I didn't even know the cash registers got robbed.
Yeah.
Too. Wow.
That's what I said, when New York
good times,
was New York.
I was New York, yeah.
It's not like that no more.
I called Nas that whole night, cursing him out. Because I knew it was somebody in his crew that was on the stage.
Never him. It was just, and you knew who it was.
He,
too. It was
he
the
had
same,
to. Yeah. It was too close. My ear was ringing still. It was the guy was had to be somebody that we knew.
I saw another DJ the other day. I said, man, you know, I'm a nice guy, bro. Like, he probably knows me from a long time ago. I had a little reputation, and you know, it was a different world. It was it was a different world. Yeah, that's interesting you brought that up. Wow, that's crazy. Yeah, rest in peace, my man Black Ed.
What is that? What is that story?
He was there.
Okay.
That's it. That's my boy. We have a documentary. Well, these guys I know, 1-9 and Eric, their team, Ella Films, put together a documentary on Illmatic they've been working on for a couple of years. And, last year, I finally jumped on. I finally participated. You know, they had all this work done, and I didn't touch it. You guys have the documentary.
I was about to say, because you were very instrumental in getting that jumped off. He forgets.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Well,
the Tribe Called Quest documentary, Beach Rhymes and Life.
It came together. Nas was part of that because he. He was doing an interview at BET at the time, and we were about to do the Rock the Bells, and he was like, yo, have you thought about, you know, documenting what you guys doing because of this, you guys are our Beatles. Like, he gave me a whole lot, and I was like, well, no, not really. And he was like, you should because of this, and this, and this, and this. And I was like,
what are the thises?
Nas is on it.
Yo.
Why did you think it was so important that they do it?
Because I was backstage, or I was at Rock the Bells, with Tribe.
Oh, so was this 2010? No, 08?
08.
This was a minute ago.
This was 08.
I can't remember.
It's got to be 08. 08.
We started shooting on the Rock the Bells 08.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow. Right. So, I mean, you know, I'm just honored. I'm on the stage with Tribe. So, I'm seeing all the Tribe right here. Like, right here. You know what I mean? In front of me, man. So, you know, so I'm automatically like, yo, where's the cameras? Yeah. Like, yo, the history, what they've done, who they are. You know, it's like Tribe introduced African culture in a cool way, like that's never been done. You had, look, I'm a fan. Look, I'm an avid fan. Look, you have Jungle Brothers. You had all these guys who kind of like, you know, Afrika Bambaataa and all of these guys. Tribe was the young version that spoke to the younger generation. Mm-hmm. So and they changed the world. Their impact on our generation changed everything. So I'm like, why isn't there a bunch of cameras on them right now? So yeah, I just got to talking about it to Ali and Tip and Fife and everybody. And at the same time, Mike Rapaport was already on it. He had cameras, you know, he's a movie guy.
Right.
So he's already on it, and he just jumped ahead and he went so hard I just kinda backed off. I was just cool with seeing it go down, mm-hmm. you know?
So it's kind of crazy because I was waiting to get to you, to talk to you, to see if you were putting
now
together.
I know your pain. Now I know what it must have been like. Even though I didn't have a crazy guy like Mac Rapaport, you know, throwing cameras around me, I had a pretty cool group that put this film together. I had nothing to do with it. I have nothing to do with it. I came on late, like last year. They had everything almost done, I guess. So so it was a little bit easier for me, I guess, probably. I don't know what y'all experience was, but I remember Tip and Mike Rapp get ready to fight.
Yeah, it got bad.
So that made me, like, I know just telling your story is not easy. But, you know, we tell it through music, but to sit down and tell your story, that's not easy. That's one of the hardest things I ever did.
When is your documentary going? Is there a calendar on it?
Yeah, it plays in New York at the Tribeca Film Festival.
Are you still interested in doing... You have a film production company?
I have Illmatic Films.
So you're going to be, like, doing some directorials, or what's up with that?
I like... Since documentaries are one of the things that I like to watch... I like docs. They like, man, they like, it's one of my favorite things to watch since I was a kid. I'm going to produce a couple. Mm-hmm. I'm working on a couple this year. One's coming up called Shake the Dust. It's about hip hop and all kinds of other countries and poor countries, third world countries, mm-hmm. and how they use hip hop as a way of freedom, of a way of escaping their realities, and it's amazing. This is amazing things, and there's a couple of more that I'm working on right now. That's really, really cool, and so yeah, I'm gonna throw my hand in that for a little bit, and see what I feel like doing.
I just like you in that, you know, that, not to take you away from, you know, I think your voice is so important still to hip hop, you know what I mean, now 2014, as it was back in 1994, and not to take you, you know, outside of that, but I think just as a visionary and as a person who understands culture, from the film perspective, I love you being in that position, you know, because you definitely, you was a big spark just for, you know, Beats, Rhymes, and Life documentary to happen. And like even hearing about Shake the Dust and just knowing, like, from my own experiences of going to different countries and seeing what it is for people, how hip hop has transformed and it is their only thing, how it used to be, you know, for for us here in America, and just seeing, you know, knowing the way that you view things, and you're really thorough. You know, I like you in that position because I think there are other stories that should be told that just need that visionary, you know.
I'm happy in this space. I'm happy. I'm gonna try not to let you down, man. I really am happy in that space. You know, I have nothing to do with this one coming out, but these guys, I think, is their first film, mm-hmm. and they did a great job. I'm definitely working with more people who are trying to do what I'm trying to do, and we're trying to, you know, touch on some topics that people will, like, really dig. Yeah, for sure.
Have you found in the business side of things, have there been any experiences that's been kind of, you look back on and you go, that was a bad, you know, position I was in, or, you know, bad deal, or has everything been pretty much, like, pretty decent and fair?
No, I've been lucky, man. Yeah. I gotta say, man, luck's been on my side in that, man. I've been really, like, I've seen things that I've only dreamed about, you know. Yeah. And I would say in the beginning, you know, I knew in the beginning it would be crazy because it's the first time you're signing the contract. Yeah. So, you know, I'm just trying to be fair to everybody. And, you know, I signed with Search. Mm-hmm. I signed with Rough House, then Columbia. So it was like all of these companies were wrapped up in my deal. Yeah. And I knew that it would all pan out in the long run, but I knew I had to get it going. I had a lot of interest in mm-hmm. me from all these people, and that was cool. So I found a way to make everybody involved and then keep going so I can get the record started.
Right.
But, of course, when you do that, there's a lot of people cutting into what's yours. And I didn't mind that, to tell you the truth, because, you know, the opportunity was bigger than a few dollars right then. You know, the opportunity to get out there was everything.
I ask you that because I know that, I mean, it's just never ending where there's the younger kids and they want to get into the business and mm-hmm. they're presented with being in situations where it could be a huge production company, like with Timbaland, with Dr. Dre or mm-hmm. any other, you know, production house. And it's just like they're being presented with contracts like, yeah, you got to give up half your publishing, you know, and that's like the standard if they want to be in it, you know. And I'm just wondering, like, what your experience was and having to make a sacrifice, giving up in percentages, I don't know what it is. And you don't have to speak to that, but just, you know, what would you say to that, you know, that young kid coming up and being presented with giving up a big portion to get it started, or maybe, you know, there's some other direction that they may want to.
I mean, you don't, when you're a new artist, as you know, you really don't have that much leverage. And when you're dealing with experienced producers, a 100-year-old huge record company worth billions of dollars, and lawyers who have a firm on Fifth Avenue, and you just coming in this thing. So you don't really want to piss nobody off. You're just like, I'll do whatever you guys say. whatever you guys say about this contract is right, I'll trust you. That's what most young guys will say. But you got to know your worth. You know what I mean? You got to know what's fair. You got to ask those guys, is this fair? Is this fair? Like, really? Like, all at the end of the day, is this contract, do you feel good about having me sign this, Mr. Producer? Mm-hmm. Do you feel good as my lawyer having me sign this deal this way? Something seems a little off. Mm-hmm. You got to make these questions. You got to, even if you can, get a second opinion. But lawyers are crazy, man. You got to watch them too. So sometimes they're really on, and they won't have your best interest at heart because they've been doing business with the record company longer, or the producer longer, and you could be a fly by night artist that comes and goes. You know what I mean? So they don't really know if they're gonna have their loyalty on you. So that's a lot of pressure as a new artist. So what you have to know, and this is crazy, you got to kind of go in there knowing that what you're doing is going to be so great that at some point, whatever this deal is, you're going to break through it. Because that's how I felt. I said in the beginning, I said, no matter what, any kind of shadiness, you know what I'm saying, that's going down, because I did learn a lesson from y'all, record company business, you know, industry rules number 4,080, record company people are shady. So when I that's Tribe Called Quest, ladies and gentlemen. When I went in there and signed my deal, I said, it doesn't matter because, you know, it's going to pan out in the end. And I'm going to pass through anything that's wrong. I don't want to curse. Anything that's wrong, I'm going to get through that. That's how I felt.
Can we talk about, like, the lead up to some of that, to the hype, to the to working with Large Professor and being on Live at the Barbecue and like how that the hype built and how it spread. How'd you get on radio the first time?
Large Professor, Live at the Barbecue is the song on the Main Source album, Main Ingredients. The Main Ingredient.
91?
That came in 91.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that came out in 91. And, you know, I knew some guys who knew some guys in the music business. And back then, you know, Large, he was this cat. He had this song called Think that I heard on the underground stations and this other song. And he had the beat that later on Big Daddy Kane's second album, he used it on a song called Mr. Welfare, which is a cool record. But Large used it years earlier, and he produced it. And my boy knew him. I needed somebody to do the beat. My DJ at the time, this kid Mel Kwan, you know, he was a DJ, but he was too busy trying to make out-of-state trips, doing this and doing that, and not focusing on the records. And he turned out not to be so great at the beats. So he had a friend who knew how to get in touch with somebody who could do beats,
okay.
And that was Lars Professor.
Okay.
I know that's a lot. I'm telling you all of this stuff about people that you don't know about
all
and all
of
this.
It.
But boom, I'm gonna speed it up. So he introduced me to Lars Professor. So we went to pick up Lars Professor from high school, his high school. And I had a few dollars, and I'm like, I want to go in the studio.
Wait, and so you are how old at this time?
Going on 17.
Okay.
So I'm like, yo, let's get in the studio. So he agreed to do it because back then everybody just wanted to work. You know, let's just work. Oh, a reason to go to the studio? Oh, bet, let's go. Oh, your man's nice? All right, cool. He didn't really look at me like, he didn't know me from a can of paint. So he's like, who is this kid? So we go to the studio, I do my thing. And afterwards he comes and he's like, yo, let's get busy. Let's do some stuff. I'm in the studio, womp, womp, womp. And I'm like, I bet. He's like, yo, I'm working with, you know, Eric B and Rakim. And he's there. I'm like, what? What? I'm like, wow. Because, you know, Main Source album ain't come out yet. So,
oh, okay.
You know, so he's telling me who he's working with. This is like Coogee Rap. I'm like, what? So he gets me in the studio. So we start working on stuff. Eric B's paying for the studio times and all of that stuff because they had open studio sessions for their album, but they wasn't working.
Right.
So I was coming in there working. Lars Professor had me coming in there working on his time.
Mm-hmm.
So Lars starts doing his album and saves me a slot on Live at the Barbecue. So I meet him, Joe Fatal, Akinelli, these are guys that's on the record. And I penned some of Joe Fatal's verse for that. And Joe Fatal was just happy. He never rapped on a record before. So he was just happy to just do it. It was a good time. And I couldn't believe that Paul, Large Professor Paul, I couldn't believe Paul put it on his album. You know, I thought it was a good song, but I was just happy. You really put it on? Yeah, it's on the album, dog. Yo, you need to go get this right. And you got to go hit copyrights in it. That forced me to go get lawyered up.
Mm.
So I was like, okay. Oh, wow. Okay, so he's like, yo, dog, we need your information. Whoa, 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 whoa. I'm like, oh, wow. I'm a businessman now. So he made that happen. And so I heard it on the radio one night. I don't know if it was Special K and Teddy Ted. I don't know who played it. But I'm walking through the projects late one night, and I see these older dudes by the radio by a car. They were sitting by their car talking. They were drinking beers, and they were late. And they were playing the radio out their car. So I'm just sitting there. I had nowhere else to go at the point. I ain't seen none of my boys, so I'm just hanging out where they at. And then the record comes on.
Streets disciple, my rap's a trifle. I shoot slugs from my brain just like a rifle. Stampede the stage, I leave the microphone split. Play Mr. Tuffy while I'm on some pretty tone shit. Verbal assassin, my architect pleases. When I was 12, I went to hell for snuffing Jesus. Nasty Nas is a rebel to America. Police murderer, I'm causing hysteria. My troops roll up with a strange force. I was trapped in a cage and lit out by the Main Source. Swimming in women like a lifeguard. Put on a bulletproof nigga, I strike hard. Kidnapped the president's wife without a plan. And hanging niggas like the Ku Klux Klan. I melt mics till the sound waves over. Before stepping to me, I'd rather step to Jehovah. Slamming MCs on cement. Cause verbally, I'm iller than an AIDS patient.
I move swift and uplift your mind. Shoot the gift when I rip and rhyme. Rapping sniper, speaking real words. My thoughts react like Steven Spielberg's poetry attacks. Paragraphs punch hard, my brain is insane. I'm out to lunch guard, science is dropped. My raps are toxic, my voice box locks and excels like a rock.
So I'm like, oh, I'm in the trance. Like, yo, that's me. Yeah, that's me. So I'm like, yo, I'm trying to tell them, yo, that's me. But they all in their conversation, they yelling and talking amongst each other. They not listening to the radio. I'm trying to tell them that's me. They're like, yeah, all right. But they not even, so I blocked them out. I'm just in my zone. I'm listening to me. So that walk from 12th Street to Vernon back to my block, I was in a trance. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, I wanted to call Paul and say, yo, they playing your record. Because I would call him anyway if they were playing his record. Yo, I heard your record. Yo, people like it, whatever. Give him feedback. So I wanted to call him and say, yo, they played the record, dog, but they played the record, the one I'm on. So from there, you know, I was on. I felt like I'd be all right. Mm. You know, it wasn't that. It didn't happen like that, but I felt like I'd be all right. In the long run, it came together. Then I met Search, and he put me on Back to the Grill, which was like a part two to Live at the Barbecue. But I'm the only one for barbecue on the song. And he already had Chubb Rock on it, Red Love a Tone. So he put me on it. Wow, this is a lot, dog.
It's amazing.
We getting it mm-hmm. in right here.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then Search works on Halftime? Or you sign with Search?
Well,
first.
Search told me that everybody at Columbia Records is looking for me.
Right.
And I would hear rumors like people have been looking for me, but I wasn't. When I went looking for record deals, I got exhausted quick.
Why?
I wasn't with trying to sell myself. Like, it's the wrong phrase, sell myself, but I wasn't with trying to convince somebody they should invest in me. Mm. If either you got it or you didn't. Mm-hmm. And because I didn't know nothing. So I'm just like, y'all don't get it. So I'm like, all right, we out. You know what I'm saying? So two trips like that, I was done. Mm-hmm. So I would hear, yo, this one want to meet you. I know somebody's looking for you. I didn't even believe it. So when Search said it, we at the studio, and some guys took me to the studio where he was at, and I was just hanging with them. So they wound up taking me there just to hang out. I didn't have any intentions to get on his record. I didn't have any intentions but to say what's up and just hang with the guys I was hanging with at the day. But he's like staring at me. He's like, yo, you're that kid, yo. And he's like, yo, Columbia Records, yo. And I'm like, oh, I want to rock with Columbia. That's who I want to rock with. You know how to get me in there? He's like, yeah. So he hooked up the meeting. So we go in and we kick it. And then they like, let's do this. So after the meetings, everything, Search is like, you know, yo, dog, you know, since I brought you here, would you mind? You know, I got this production company. I said, say no more. Whatever you want to do, we doing it. And that's what we did.
Mm. Got it.
But we took a few trips to Philly also because they had the subsidiary. They had Rough House in Philly with Chris Schwartz. And he had the Fugees. He had Cypress Hill. I think he had this cat, Curious George, Puerto Rican cat, mm-hmm. I think, from Lower East Side. And they wanted me. And I felt like that was better to massage me into the huge Columbia record system, to just go right in. You know, you'd always want to go through a Cold Chillin', which was a big label back then, or some type of label that was rap-oriented so that you'd be really pushed and protected and all of that. So I thought it was a great idea. So I managed to figure out how to do this deal with Searchlight, Rough House, and Columbia CBS. This was before Sony.
Right.
This is Columbia CBS. So I was like, as long as that Columbia and CBS is in there, we good. Mm-hmm. So we were able to do that deal.
The only other thing that was going on, Columbia CBS, I don't even know if they were still had that relationship at the time you signed, was Def Jam, right?
Yes, it was. They actually dropped Def Jam. Yeah. They dropped Def Jam. And at one point, it was like Russell and Lior didn't even have a deal for Def Jam. I watched them drop them. Mm. And I was like, how does Def Jam get dropped? But this is me on the inside watching, you know, the insides of what's going on with record companies and the major record companies and independent record companies and backings and who's putting up the money and all of this stuff. So they let Def Jam go. They let Rough House go. I wound up directly on Columbia Records.
Yeah.
Which was what I wanted in the first place. You know, all respect to Chris Schwartz. You know, he was a great visionary that a lot of people don't talk about too much. Respect to MC Search. But, I was trying to get there anyway. So I wound up getting there to just be on Columbia Records because everybody else couldn't keep up.
Right. Okay. So after you sign, after that, the dust settles, do you go right in the studio?
I had these ideas. And I think Search thought that I was just dreaming too big. I wanted to work with Tribe. I wanted to work with Premier. I wanted to work with Pete Rock. And so could you imagine? I'm like this. I'm brand new. No, you know what I mean? I got like two verses out there. How am I going to get a beat from Q-Tip? How am I going to get a beat from Premier and Pete Rock? Luckily enough, Paul, Lost Professor, already was friends with you guys and friends with Pete and friends with Premier. So he's the liaison. He liaisoned that. Or he really introduced me to everybody. And they had been familiar with my verses. So they were interested. And I was lucky to have them produce for me at that stage. So, but Search at the beginning was like, huh? When we talked about making the album, he was producing tracks.
Right.
So he had gave me a bunch of tracks, and they were cool tracks. But they were not for my album. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to explain that he was disappointed because he really wanted to produce my album. But I had to really explain to him my vision and what I wanted to do. So Search kind of just said, yeah, all right, cool. He backed off and just... You know, he backed all the way off, and I just started running out there and started putting my album together.
Okay.
Yeah.
So did you then all of a sudden have some open studio time?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Chung King Studios, the original Chung King Studios. Yeah. Yep.
And what was happening in the studio? So this is like 93?
This is 92.
Okay.
This is 92. I do Halftime. It's the first song I do. And they needed it for a soundtrack, and I thought that was cool. So we give them Halftime.
It was a Michael Rapaport soundtrack.
That was his first movie, too.
Yeah. Zebrahead?
Yeah. His first movie, my first single. Yeah.
Check me out, y'all. Nasty Nas in your area. About to cause mass hysteria. Before a blunt, I take out my fronts. Then I start the front. Matter of fact, I'll be on a manhunt. You couldn't catch me in the streets without a ton of reefer. That's like Malcolm X catching a jungle fever. King poetic, too much flavor, I'm major. Atlanta ain't braver, I pull a number like a pager. Cause I'm an ace when I face the base. 40 side is the place that is giving me grace. Now wait, another dose, say you might be dead. And I'm a Nike head. I wear chains that excite the feds. It ain't a damn thing gonna change. I'ma perform a strange show to Mike. Warmer was born the game. Nas, why did you do it? You know you got the mad fat fluid when you rhyme. It's halftime.
And you know, from there we just kept recording.
Okay.
I wound up in Battery Studios with Q-Tip and the guys, and I wound up in Pete Rock's basement, the famous basement in Mount Vernon. D&D Studios with Premier, famous D&D Studios. So I was going to bouncing around from all these places.
And were you writing there or were you writing at home? And
I had half of the album already written.
Okay.
It was already done. Mm-hmm. So it was all about making it all up to date, like tweaking it, making it up to date. Yeah, yeah. Well, One Love with Tip, I wrote, that was written once I got once he gave me the sample. He just looped the sample and gave it to me, and I wrote it.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was fresh. It was maybe one or two or three. Life's a Bitch was fresh, mm-hmm. you know. But, you know, most of New York State of Mind was already written. Most of Represent was already written. Yeah.
Okay. So there's 9 songs on the album. Did you want there to be more?
I thought I would have like at least 10 songs and one more. I thought that the game was going to be mad at me. You know, I was like, oh, I got to just put, but it wasn't fitting. Anything that I tried to, anytime I attempt, it was last minute, and I tried to attempt to do one more song, and it just didn't work. It wasn't meant to be. And I was like, all right, I'm cool with 9, but it feels good at 9, you know what I mean? Like, you play it from beginning to end, but I still want it just the way it's supposed to be. I wanted 10 songs, but I didn't fight it too much.
And what was the time pressure? Because it leaked?
Well, it leaked, and from the moment they signed me, it was 2 years that went by. I wasn't in the studio all the time, like today. I'm not in the studio all the time, so 2 years went by, and they were like, what are we doing? I had spent maybe $250,000 on the budget at that point, and mm-hmm. we kept needing more money for the budget to open back up. And it was like, how much is this going to cost? This is a rap album from a new kid in 1993. You know, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And by that time, you know, I'm playing it in my boys' cars. I'm leaving copies there and here. People, I'm giving everybody copies around me. And, you know, it leaked. People in the record company had copies, and it leaked. So it was a combo. It was a combo of it being leaked on the streets already, and that I was spending more and more money to go in the studio and really just hang out. I wasn't doing too much. So it was like, let's do this and put it out.
Mm-hmm. And then what happened? Did you hit the road?
No. I started to do in stores and I hit the road on the promo side. It took me to Europe and all that.
I'm excited to know what's the next record, but I don't want to beat you up about that. I don't want to harass you about what's coming. I know, I'd like to respect the
it's all good.
The space.
It's all good. It took me a while to jumpstart it. I started working with Tim I want to say a year and a half ago. Like, I think it was the same year I dropped my last album, Life is Good. I think I started with Tim, and it felt really powerful. Yeah. It felt like it was really powerful. And I stepped back from it. And, you know, Tim's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I just need a minute to just, like, you know, take it all in, just live a little and, you know, enjoy my, you know, day by day stuff and, you know, daily stuff I'm doing. I didn't want to go back in the studio that quick. And so I felt like I needed to be inspired. So I wasn't really, really, really inspired, to tell you the truth, until we just started to, like, kind of like embark on this 20th anniversary. Mm. So it wasn't until then that I really started to feel it, like, because I got a chance, and I got to give credit to the documentary guys. Them showing me the footage and stuff really, like, it really lets you know, where you come from and everything, and where you at now. So, you know, I salute them dudes, man, 1-9, Eric Parker, the whole crew over there that's put that film together, because that's helped me, you know, find the inspiration, you know, and I found it. So I jump-started the album again, the new one. So because I started maybe a year and a half ago with the ideas, no ID. I'm there, so now I'm at a place where I'm just, you know, I laid down ideas. So now the ideas I laid down then, now I'm kind of like, I'm going through them and I'm fixing them. Mm. And so now I'm at a place where I'm like, I could play a song to somebody and they really get it and they really understand, like, they really feel it, you know. And but at first I didn't. So I'm happy to say I'm at a place where it feels right. You know, okay. I talked to Swiss, and we went through joints, and you know, and No ID, and Timbaland, and you know, it's the only interview I'm gonna talk about it, because I know once this comes out, people might ask me about the record, and man, I just want to finish it and get it done.
That's what's up.
Yeah,
that's why I want to ask you.
Yeah,
because that's what I'm saying. Like, I respect the space. People will want to know, and I try to stay away from the normal people want to know questions.
Hopefully this thing here, like I'm charged right now as I'm going in there, and I'm like, you know, 2 years I think it's been so since my last album, so this new one is I'm happy to get it together and get it out there.
So,
who are you making this one for? And do you still feel like do you feel as strongly that you got to be number one? Like, who is your competition?
Me, myself, is my competition, I think.
You mean your legacy?
Your
19-year-old self?
19, 20. 21, 22, 23, 24, all of them. All of those years, you know, is my competition. Who am I making it for? Then I'd have to say the same people I was making it for back then, but they grew up.
Right.
They grew up. So I kind of sometimes feel bad for them, because some of them don't want to hear what's going on today, and that's not right. You're supposed to get everybody to listen, but some of them don't want to hear certain things, and a lot of people kind of like, I want to say, grew up with me in a lot of ways. And I mean, there's a lot of people that was really into my last album, and this is the next step. You know, this is the next step right here. So it's a continuation of what I've been building through the years.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I saw you perform at South by Southwest, and it seemed like you were really happy to do the old songs, to do Illmatic. I mean, other mm-hmm. stuff, other albums also, but does it still feel, is it repetitive? Is it boring to you to do that still?
Because it's 20 years, it's a party.
Yeah.
So you saw me partying.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real celebratory mood. I'm in that space. I crack a bottle of Henny on the stage and take it to the neck and just, you know, and I just feel like I feel life. It's like, it's a feeling that's like I can't explain. So, yeah, it's a party. I'm having a party.
That's great. Yo, I mean... Not too many people can have an album 20 years later that the world still craves. You know what I mean? So that's like...
But, you know, it's an honor. I'm honored that people would still like it. Because the content is relevant to today.
Absolutely.
And you know, shout out to everybody out there that has an anniversary thing going on. There's a few people. Shout out to Def Jam and their 30th anniversary, because mm-hmm. they are... a historical record company in the history of music. And I was happy. It was one of my dream labels was, well, I'll give you my three dream labels, Columbia, Def Jam, Cold Chillin'.
Ooh.
People today don't know Cold Chillin', but that's Biz Markie.
That makes sense, though.
Yeah, it makes sense. That's where I'm from is yeah. Marley Marl in Queensbridge. So, you know, so Cold Chillin', you know, I still want one of those Cold Chillin' varsity jackets right now.
Oh, man.
You know what I mean? I still want that. So, you know, I always wanted the Def Jam jacket. And, of course, Columbia Records is everything to me. Mm-hmm. So I've been lucky to be able to go all of these places, except for Coachella, because I don't think there is no more Coachella. Nah. But if y'all do, if Coachella pops back up, I'll give you one album. I'll give you one.
Where is Marley calling?
No, right? That made. But, well, Marley talked to us about the whole Coachella thing, but, you know,
wow.
The music is timeless, man. The lyricism is timeless. The stories are timeless, you know, so... You know, it'll be 20, 40 years, whatever, but you definitely are an important person for the story of hip hop. And no, I say thank you, you know, for sharing your art with the world, man.
Appreciate it, man. Appreciate you guys having me here. I felt comfortable to explain my story. And I've done a few interviews, one with Rap Genius recently, another one with BBC. I don't know if I can shout all those out, but, you know, but yeah, this is another interview that I feel real comfortable talking about it, man, because, you know, for one, it's with you. I've known you forever, but, you know, you guys are like just easy for me to, you guys are like easy for me to just open up to. So it's not easy to go back. You know, it's not always easy to go back, man. And shout out to AZ, who's on that album, man. Incredible lyricist. DJ LES, who's not as known as the rest of those legends. I was happy to just put somebody from Queensbridge on the album with those incredible producers. You know, so shout out to DJ LES and everybody that was involved. Thank you.
Why isn't it easy to go back?
I mean, when's the last time you went back?
Okay, yeah.
Oh, you got it that quick? You feel me? So and then, you know, it's in front of the public. You know what I'm saying? So when you go back on the air, you know, you're going through stuff. You're vulnerable, you know, and, you know, you're going back through memories. And like we were talking, I started to remember a time when I saw Jarobi, and that was big for me for the first time, and I followed them because I heard them talking about going to a club,
right.
You know, so I followed them and found out what was hip, and then I met more people and heard about what other clubs was popping in the city and so on and so forth. So you go back and you talk about times, you know, that's just, you know, that's private. You know what I mean? Private and personal to you. But, you know, here it is. This is what we do. We share it with the world. It's not that big a deal. It is what it is.
Well, do you care? I mean, do you get anything out of good music journalism? Do you, like, pay a price for bad music journalism? Or does the music and the culture, does it matter?
In a big way. Of course, if you're Sade, it doesn't matter. Right. She does what she does. But for all of us, journalism is a huge deal, because you guys study the craft more than artists. It wasn't fair to throw me as a 20-year-old guy in front of seasoned journalists on my first album. Mm-hmm. They were asking me questions that I didn't have answers to, that I didn't understand.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand why they would ask me this when I hadn't even had that much experience. Mm-hmm. They were asking me questions you should ask Sting and David Bowie and Miles Davis.
Mm. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But it prepared me for what was to come. And in a lot of ways, you know, journalists, like there's one that takes credit for helping write Sexual Healing for Marvin Gaye. In a lot of ways, journalists are helpful. We're on the same team in a lot of ways.
Sure.
Because even with the guys that criticize you, they can get you on your game. They get you back on your game. They're not the nicest things that's being said about you, but they're here to criticize, or they're here to even help explain what you've done where you might not even understand it. Mm-hmm. And that's what the documentary Time Is O-Matic has done for me so far. I'm like, good looking, y'all, because I needed to see how someone else saw this thing play out.
Right. Thanks. I'm good.
I'm good. We try to make sure the microphone check is at home, so you know we not up in here, you know, stirred it up the wrong way. I certainly have not lived my life like that, so you know.
But anytime, you guys, bro, I'm coming back, you know,
nice.
And chop it up. Thanks, microphone check.
Thank you.
Salute.